Welcome back to The Blast. It's March 5th, 2023? March, the Madness Month, the Ides of March. March on, wayward Christian soldiers. I'm Dr. Dan. We're putting the world on blast here on The Blast, trying to talk things into submission, get them back into their cage somewhat. I don't know. I bring comedians on here and we attack issues and we talk comedy and all the good stuff. This week's co-host from Stuttgart, Germany, everybody's favorite expat, ex-Mormon, kind of an ex-Mormon, Bent Washburn. Wow. And from Minneapolis, a guy I've never talked to, but Bent says is really interesting. So the acute perception of Robert Burrill.
Burrill, yeah, you got it.
Interesting. So, all right, it's a crazy world out there. Let's put it on blast. We're going to start with some comic catch-up. That's our... Sounds like a catch-up, but comic reorientation. I don't know. What are you guys doing these days?
It does sound like a show that would have been on Comedy Central, you know, before Craig Kilborn with, Andy Richter or somebody and like, comic catch-up.
And then they bring on Pauly Shore and he would.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to jump into this today because speaking of old comics, because I watched the Chris Rock special last night. So that's going to be our first topic. But before we get there. Yeah. Robert, tell me about yourself. You're a Minneapolis dude.
Minneapolis guy based out of here now. But fortunately, I've been able to start touring nationally, headlining some clubs. And then Bent has been very good to me and brought me along as well and got me into some other clubs. And actually, at the end of this month, for all of your listeners in Calgary, he and I are going to be at the Comedy Cave. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done that place. Yep.
Yeah.
Still the same guy, Bent? Same.
Yeah, dude? Same guy. A week long, hanging out with Jack, the Coptic Christian from Egypt. I mean, it's a whole different. Just talking to him is a whole different world, and it's.
Oh yeah, he was an interesting guy.
It's going to be awkward because I'm known for my defund the Coptics movement around 2 years ago that ruffled a lot of feathers, and I put it behind me. I learned from past mistakes, but it's hard to escape it. So hopefully, we'll be able to make that water under the bridge pretty quickly.
Well, he's such a laid-back guy. I'm sure he'll be fine with it.
Yeah, Jack's totally laid-back.
I took a ride with him to radio one morning, and it was the most racist ride I've ever had in my life. I'm from the South, and I was offended by how he just kept finding everybody to hate along the way. And I'm like, wow, you are good at this.
Just like a drive-by intolerance, just like
exactly what it was.
Yeah. I love talking to him. I get a total. I go way back with him, and I don't know. Just something about the religion, and he talked to me about the religion. I tell him about my Mormon upbringing, and it's off we go.
No, he was an interesting guy. I enjoyed that gig, but he's his own thing for sure. So, what are you up to, Bent? You're starring in a drag cabaret.
Yes, I'm not. It's not drag, but there was a guy who had a bow on his head. They brought him up from the audience. They stuck a bow on his head. Yeah,
that'll get you arrested,
Robert. Not legal in Tennessee.
I was about to say, yeah, we could probably tell you're not in Tennessee then if that's the case. Is it like the movie Cabaret? Do you have like Eliza Minnelli? Because that is German, right? That's
you're right. I think it is.
Yeah, it's cabaret. Definitely German because it was about the Nazis, right?
Yeah. Was it? I'm not literate.
It's one of those that's kind of like The Sound of Music where you forget about it until you watch it again and you're like, oh, I must have been unaware of Nazis at that. It's everywhere.
It seems so sweet.
Yeah.
it's just a musical like review. Cabarets, like the way they do them in New York or where else, you know, there's some amazing singers in the show. And then me.
Sing in this show.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Well, awkward. I mean, I'm not, but it's a funny song. So I enjoy that aspect of finding the delivery in the song to get the laughs. It's a lot of fun. That part's fun. And I do a character. I don't just.
Can you give us a piece? Just a taste?
Here it goes. This is the song in every show. That no one likes because it's boring. That's it. That's the opening line.
Nice. All right.
All right.
Is it
beautiful?
Is Did you write that? Is that part of the show? Is it?
And that's, I didn't write the song. No, oh, okay. But it's just the song. It's just a guy complaining about the number. It's an old washed up actor complaining about the number that he has to sing in the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just me whining about the actual song I'm singing. For.
And kind of like a Mr. Cellophane moment from Chicago. Like they the comic character gets one song. Yeah.
It's mentioned in the song, a song like Sentimental Man or Mr. Cellophane. That's one of the lines. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Damn.
Oh, okay.
I know my musicals, man. I'm way up on
love this. There's lots of Sondheim in there. I love Sondheim. And the Sopranos, there's some singers in this that are really good. There's some pros. And her voice is amazing. And she does a bunch of numbers from Stephen Sondheim. And it's impressive. I mean, she nails it.
That's awesome. This is the second one you've done, right? Didn't you do Spam-a-Lot?
I did Spam-a-Lot. Yeah. I mean, and that one was fun too. But again, I just kind of half sing and it's comedy. So they would never put me in anything.
But you also do stand-up, right? Like you're just, it's not just one song. It's, you're not just rehearsing for the one song that, yeah.
No, yeah, I get to do stand-up during the show. And I just put together all my relationship stuff. I do about 20 minutes, 2 10-minute sets.
Hey, Robert, we're losing the top of your head there.
Sorry, uh-oh. Just adjusting a little bit here. All right.
Got so much hair, Dan. That's why I'm just to contrast with you.
Well, we're literally a progression here.
Yeah.
Or a regression, I guess.
Yeah, except you leap from you to me, it drops, it adds about 20 years. It looks like you go old and then, okay.
So, all Robert, right. You're starting to headline clubs. Is that the deal you've been featuring or what's up?
Yeah, so I kind of came up in Minneapolis. So Acme's the big club there and I got bumped to headliner.
Foundation.
Yeah, around a year or two ago. And so I've been able to parlay that into headlining gigs at the St. Louis Funny Bones and some clubs out in North Carolina, the Comedy Zone and Idiot Box, and along with some smaller venues too, and just trying to put myself out there more and headline as much as I can on the road.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember those days. I'm flying to Thailand tonight.
Oh wow!
Oh, you get on a ship?
Yeah, I'm. So I told these guys I would fill in for whatever during this first year, like just throw me wherever. So they're throwing me to Thailand, and then it's 3-day cruise to Sri Lanka, and then a 4-day cruise to Dubai.
Ship is that? That's,
Princess,
I'm flying to Sri Lanka next week. So
I did a weekend in Des Moines, Iowa in November. That was all right.
Very similar.
That was all right. Yeah, similar.
You drove.
I don't like to be a one-upper when it comes to stories and stuff, but you know, that's when I see an opening like that.
Well, I don't know if like these are one-ups or not. Like Bent set me up with this, and the first one I did was in South America. I was on a Brazilian coastal cruise and it was all Brits and I ate it like I've never eaten it before. it was the roughest show I've had at least in 30 years.
Oh, wow.
They're not, No, it's not. They're hard. No,
and I wasn't ready. It was me too. So it was me. It was clearly me too. I hadn't been on stage for 8 years.
Really? Man, what would you've been writing and doing? But
well,
not?
I mean, I've been on stage, but I haven't done a club. Like I hadn't done a gig. I did like 10 minutes here and things like that. But it was awful.
And you got to be squeaky clean, right? The whole hour for those?
It's 45-minute sets, so you're supposed to be clean the first one, and sometimes they tell you to be dirty on the second one, but I always write things clean just so I can do it either way. You can always add dirt.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, cool. That's a good comic catch-up. We did a little bit of...
We got that. We got done.
Got that. So let's talk... The first topic I wanted to talk about was because I watched it last night. I don't know if you guys have watched it yet. The Chris Rock live special that he did on Netflix. Did you guys watch it?
I had a show in Ramsey, Minnesota, but this morning I watched maybe 15, 20 minutes just kind of because I wanted to catch the Will Smith stuff because I had a feeling maybe we talk about that or that seems to be what everybody's talking about right now. So it's the tail end of it, which makes sense because then where do you go from addressing the thing everybody wants to hear you talk about? But yeah, I thought he handled it well, but you could definitely see like the frustration and the anger that I think he still has both toward Will and his wife over how everything went down. But he was doing it therapeutically through an artistic performance versus just snapping on somebody.
He went off. Like he was mm-hmm. hardcore. He did not pull the punch about what he thought about Will Smith doing that. Like if you haven't seen it yet, you know, you should watch it. I don't want to be a spoiler here, so just skip this section. But he essentially was like, I mean, he called Will Smith a bitch, like, I don't know, 20 times for being selective about going after him because he's small, but not going after all the trolls who actually went after him hardcore for allowing his wife to have an affair with somebody else and then talking about it on stage or, you know, on a podcast.
Yeah, because he set it up where, like, everybody else was calling Will a bitch because of his wife having an affair with the son of her friend. And he's like, but I did, and I, like, reached out, didn't take my call. But then at the Oscars, he does the ultimate bitch move and hits Chris. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can think of a lot of comics that he wouldn't have slapped. Well, Joe Rogan. I don't think he would have slapped Joe Rogan.
No way. No way. That I would have wanted to see, because that would have been a moment.
Oh, yeah. It would have lasted a couple seconds, maybe. Yeah.
And I remember when it happened, watching Rock, like, his initial impulse wasn't to fight back, but to verbally go after him. And he, mm-hmm. you could just see it. He almost had another Jada Pinkett Smith joke in his mouth. And he went,
we'll just let it go. No, I thought he was really good as just a human in that moment. Like, wow.
Well, and that's going to sell that special, kind of what you're talking about, Robert. Like, that's what everybody's tuning in, and it's the last 7 minutes or so. And he did a good job with it, I think. That part of it was watchable. But it's this comic asset that suddenly you've got, like mm-hmm. Louis C.K. Is he going to talk about the stuff? Mm-hmm, and so people just tune in to watch that piece of uranium in your act, which is pretty valuable.
And I think he was very smart in the way he played it, too, because I remember the first show he did after that was sold out. But it's people that I don't think are aware of how comedy works, where, I mean, Chris Rock is brilliant, but he's not going to have a well thought out, well done 10-minute bit on being slapped by Will Smith 2 days later. Like, that's just not how it works. And so, I would imagine honing it through all of his shows and then doing the live special last night, that gets to be maybe not the final word, but definitely, I think, a take on it that he's ready to put out there and stand behind, because invariably you still have people that defended Will Smith who were like, well, Chris Rock shouldn't say that about another man's wife and all this stuff. And it's like, okay, but you also don't deserve to get up there and clock a comic because there's a joke you don't like, you know?
Yeah. Did you have any comedy about that? Did you write any, like, do you have any jokes that occurred to you about that whole thing?
I didn't. You know, I was doing too many ships at the time.
Too many ships.
Too many ships sounds like a show that I would definitely watch, starring you just going from boat to boat in front of just a bunch of fat old people.
No one's going to hit me.
Yeah.
No, mostly I think that whole thing, I wanted to hear what he had to say, you know, for sure. What other people had to say. And I don't know. I didn't feel compelled to talk about it that much. I don't know why. I just felt like, oh, no, he'll do it. I felt completely confident that this topic would be thoroughly.
Well, in my other world, like in my media theory, academic rhetoric, public discourse world, it was just a fascinating moment because it was a reality that was a real reality, not a fake, you know, produced reality that nobody expected on the biggest stage, one of the biggest media stages in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely unscripted. And it was an assault. Like you don't ever see it in a live assault like that. Maybe you see it, you can watch tons of videos of it. You know, but it was just a crazy media moment between reality and simulation, and people didn't know if it was this a bit, you know?
Yeah.
And so it just had all these factors in it from a theory perspective that just made it fascinating.
It was. It was like a little TikTok video sliced into the Oscars. It was wild. You know, that kind of a feel, like voyeuristic and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seemed too, by the way he ended the special with his mic drop moment, was talking about why he didn't go after Will. And he said because he was raised, because he had parents that taught him not to fight in front of white people. And then he slammed the mic down. I think from, you know, Honky McHonkerson's view of it or whatever. But I think that's probably the source of a lot of the frustration that Chris Rock had. And I think a lot of other black people had about that moment where it's like, here is something that we're supposed to be celebrating, you know, because it's not often that a black guy wins best actor. You know, it, Denzel, I think Mahershala Ali won some supportings, but it doesn't happen often. So this is a moment that's supposed to be like this crowning achievement we can all celebrate. And by just lashing out and hitting Chris, it kind of reinforces all these very ugly negative stereotypes about black men. So instead of just being able to make this night where they can come together, now they're on the defensive and like, well, because you have some people justifying what he did and then others trying to downplay it, where I think most people, and this I think is a testament to the power of the moment, where there's some people that I disagree with online, social media, they're friends. I went to school, small town. They're very conservative, very far right. But even they were like, you don't hit a comic. You don't like, you know, you get to say whatever you want, free speech. So like, it was so powerful that my friends that would have stormed the Capitol had they could have bought a ticket were in lockstep agreement with me on this issue. Like, yeah, you don't that's get beautiful. To do that.
It can all come together.
Yeah.
Will Smith, you don't get to punch the tiny comic in the face. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. And it was this cluster bomb. So you had the event, then you had the cluster bombing of reaction around it. And it lasted about 3 or 4 days and it absorbed everything, like the shock waves emanating out from that moment, just absorbed everybody. Like you had people, I heard ESPN people talking about it.
Oh yeah.
As well, he was Muhammad Ali. So I guess there's some connection, you know, but everybody had to come in with some type of perspective on it. And then there's the people who are blowing it up, kind of taking it, making it worse so they can have a horrible perspective. It was like the Damar Hamlin, you know, event.
Yep.
Suddenly it's like, oh my God. It's cluster so much.
Constant. Everybody in front of a camera wanted to jump in on it. Yeah.
Well, and because, I thought was, oh, go ahead, Robert.
Oh, just because when something like that happens, people are obsessed with it and they want to consume as much content about that as they can. So not only do you have the talking heads on TV that are talking about it because it's the news of the day, but everybody else is talking about it too, because you never know when people are on Spotify or on their whatever. And it's like, I want to hear as much as I can about this topic. That might be how you gain listeners and stuff, is by what? Okay. So what's the, even if you don't have a well thought out opinion or whatever, you're just going to start spouting off on it anyway, because you're probably going to get a few more ears on it.
Yeah. Everybody comes in it's a shark. It's a feeding frenzy. You know, the big whale is dead in the water. And everything comes in and you watch those time lapse videos of how, you know, a whale sinks to the bottom. Then all the different things eat their piece until it's finally like just some kind of crazy worm eating on the bone. And you're like, OK, even those are
like,
you know, feeding off this thing.
The Murdoch trial. That's another example. I mean, that's the true crime. Oh, golden goose there.
So I was curious what you guys thought, because I watched the whole special. I watched the first 7 minutes and I turned it off because I'm like, it's another old dude talking about young woke culture. And I've had this discussion with people about Chappelle and the trans issues. I'm like, I think these guys are out of their lane. I don't think they've earned the right to go in there and really talk about these issues. They have no direct experience with it, really. They don't have, you know, anything unique to say. So I'm not interested in it as comedy. But it's this kind of, you know, you mentioned it. We're white guys, you know, it's three white guys. And that's an easy thing to look at it and go, okay, entitlement. Yeah. They're going to talk about this stuff, but I try to stay in my lane as much as I can. And then if I don't know something about it, don't have direct experience or unique insight, I just don't talk about it in public.
Yeah.
But I think Chris Rock was kind of, he started out with that anti-woke, which Bill Burr did, and you know, everybody's doing now. Yeah. And I'm like, you have nothing to say.
Nothing new.
Yeah, that's
beginning, a few interesting good points, but after a while, like, yeah. And I don't.
Isn't that how you earn the right to talk about it as a comic, that you have unique angles, right?
You need to have something new. Yeah, I think so. I don't have anything new. I mean, I think you can make it.
You
new.
Sounded so sad, dude. Like, oh, I don't have.
But like, I'm you're old. Talking about being a Mormon missionary. you know, you have all that great material about it. That's a unique perspective that you lived, that you deeply understand. You clearly have the legitimate right to do comedy about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think if you will processing it, like if you're talking about that issue in a way that's vulnerable, like how does it affect you and how do you feel about it, but not this preachy kind of, because to me, it turns into this telling everybody the answer instead of, it should be about questioning. I could see anyone doing an authentic piece if they're talking about how it made them change their footing or think differently, or then it's going to be authentic. But the moment it just turns preachy to me. I don't know.
No, that's a really good point. That moment when you're going from the questioner who's confused about this and trying to process it to believing you're an authentic, source on this issue. I've got some solutions. Yeah.
Even though I do, I feel like I know, but I then, if I think about it, I really don't. That's
right.
So it makes me think they haven't quite thought about it.
But even that, I think that I don't think any, unless I missed it, I haven't seen a take on it too, where it's the, like, I'm trying to evolve or I'm trying to keep up or, you know, let me, you know, like the struggle of trying to adjust to that, I think would be very interesting. I wonder how much of it is based on the fact that the comedians we're talking about, Chappelle, Chris Rock, Bill Burr, to an extent, are at the height of the game, the most successful, well-compensated performers. So I feel like as a comic and you're struggling, almost anything can be kind of a threat to you. The price of gas, the whatever. It's so you talk about what you feel, what's going on in your life that you see as a threat or conflict or whatever. And so with them, exactly. So these are their problems. It's not any of this stuff. It's, am I going to be canceled if I say some shit? And so I think they kind of get sort of locked into this because that's like the big struggle for them now is because, you know, they're rich, they're famous. They have, so this is the one thing where they can be like, okay, well, I'm still under attack. So I'm going to fight back against this shit.
That's a great point. I think that's a great point. Yeah.
And also there's just such a gigantic comedy base for that. It's almost like a politician, and maybe you want to use this as a segue or not. But to me, a stand-up doing anti-woke stuff is the same thing as, like, you know, Trump getting up at CPAC and saying, like, I'll be your retribution, where it's like, okay, we know we they're at a comedy club. Of course, most of them are going to be anti-woke. And so it seems a little lazy to be like, well, my stance is I'm anti-woke. So I agree with you, Bent. I'm even like, okay, if you want to make anti-woke your thing, be creative at it, be something anyway, and maybe, whether or not you're genuine about it, but to just be like, well, it's hard to say things these days in your live Netflix special that you're making a shit ton of money for. I love Chris Rock, but at the same time, it's almost like, you're going to be okay, dude. You'll be okay.
Yeah, you're going to be fine. You're going to make it through.
Yeah,
I think too, if you're going to do any of those kind of topical stuff's tough because you're going up against, you know, I watched Bill Maher the other night. He's got a team of writers. So when he talks about it, it's him and a whole team just obliterating that topic. And when I'm I'm not going to, what am I going to, I have nothing to add to this. If I come up with something, I'll let you know. But
that's another interesting.
And I kind of watch it with, you know, like Robert, when you're talking about, and Ben saying working your way through it is different than you think you've found your way through it.
Yeah.
But they have this and Chris Rock used it last night. There's a disingenuous stand-up technique of, instead of you saying the horrible things, you just lay them off on a character.
The character is awful.
You know, and therefore, like, you can reprimand that mythical character you just created. And Chris Rock did it last night where he's like, I love trans people. I love all people. I'm an actor. I accept everyone. I'm like, great. How do you fight against that, you know, position? He goes, but, you know, if my dad became trans, I would be fine with it. But my brother, and then he literally acted out his brother saying all the horrific things to his father, and he reprimanded the brother. And that's just a disingenuous technique to me, that you're still getting your laughs, but you're avoiding being the villain just through technique. Like,
was he criticizing the brother or talking?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, my brother drives a truck and this is how he would talk to my dad. And then he had a great killer line to finish with, like, hey, that's that woman is your dad you're talking to.
Yeah.
There's still good comedy, but it's just like, yeah, if you're going to make this claim, if you want to get on that side of it, quit laying it off on some other character.
It just seems like a way to pretend to be edgy without actually being edgy.
Yeah.
I just doing that kind of stuff, I think, where it's, like the mom, dad stuff. We're like, okay. And maybe career-wise, if you offend the wrong people, something gets pulled. So maybe it's like a little edgy or something. But yeah, I don't know. Then again, I haven't actually seen the full thing. I just watched the Will Smith part of it too. But
I think you're right that there's people in those positions of power. There's no risk for them. But I do think if you get into certain communities that start censoring, and the censors in these smaller mics and stuff. Oh, absolutely. But the people that are getting canceled are like fledgling open mic comics that can't get on this stage because so-and-so doesn't like them. I mean, I've seen that happen.
It's a two-sided issue for sure. Yeah. Do you qualify to be able to talk about this stuff? Which the first for comics is, can you make it funny? Like if you can make it funny, we'll allow you to basically talk about anything, even if you pick a heinous angle, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Then the other side of the issue is the audience reaction. Like you're getting canceled by people you weren't doing the comedy for, you know.
Yeah. So
it splinters really quickly on the two sides.
The first thing you said, stay in your lane. I mean, we don't get to escape what we look like and where we come from. I mean, the audience makes a decision about your archetype within what, half a second? And then you got to deliver from your archetype. That's just the way it is. Like this cabaret I'm in, there's two males that sing this song about two princes. And you know what? They look like princes. They do. If I tried to do, no, I can't. I just can't. It's not going to work. So when sometimes comics go outside their archetype a bit, and I've done it. I've definitely done it. I remember early in my life, oh, put on a leather jacket and I'll be, no.
Did you see Mark Maron's latest?
I tried to watch it.
From Bleak to Dark. Oh, didn't like it?
I'm not a fan. I find him to be mediocre thought.
That's fair. But I will give him credit because I don't think, to me, he's probably the most prominent comic I'm aware of that doesn't, at least in his specials, doesn't really talk about cancel culture or any of that. It's just like, it's almost annoying because the art form is talking, right? So it's almost like, so then by talking about you're talking about how you can't talk about stuff when it's like, you're up there, they're letting
you're talking just about it.
Yeah. Talk about stuff. No. So that's, or Patton Oswalt, like Mark Maron's, there was a really powerful chunk on his wife or girlfriend dying, Lynn Shawcroft. And to me, that's interesting. Like, there's so much other stuff out there. There's death. What's the point of stuff? There's all this other. Then be like, well, these people make it so I can't say these words any. Like, you're up there. You're talking. You're saying stuff, right? Like,
I want to, just as a devil advocate, I think cancel culture is a real problem. Like in Russia and China, cancel culture is pretty serious. You know, if you were doing it there, or even just some Eastern European country, like even if you were like, okay, you got a point, but
yeah, I watched
America. Come on, it's not that bad.
I've been gleaning all the art house and small foreign movies for the last year because I ran through all the major media. And I watched a Russian film the other day called Davlatov, I think, and it was about a novelist who basically never got much recognition until after he died. Now he's very successful in Russia and his whole world. And it was basically they knew they were being actively canceled by the state, and then all the apparatus of the state and all the people who scared of the apparatus of the state. And he had written all this stuff and couldn't get any of it. Not only just not published, couldn't get it out of the country to get it published anywhere else. Now, exactly what you're saying. That's cancel. And, you know, then they're being jailed for this.
Yeah. So you got to keep it in perspective. I mean, I don't mind criticizing the cancel. I don't mind. Let's talk about that, but keep it in perspective. I mean, like there's a guy when the Ukrainian war first kicked off, all these anti-American screeds on Instagram And he's from America. And I said, and somehow he was gearing it into how awesome China was, how horrible. And I was like, do you know you can post this in China, dude? He didn't, it just, no perspective on, it's not perfect, but it's, come on, it's not that bad.
Well, Robert, it sounds like you're out there actively still talking to the real people about this stuff. Like, I'm now doing cruise comedy, and I work in, I work in, like, I have right wingers on my rhetoric podcast, and I'll go dive into the grimiest thought process ever. But in cruise comedy, I'm just there to do 45 minutes clean, make people laugh, and then go on, you know, shore the next day so I can walk around Sri Lanka. Yeah. I mean, it's total, like, not an art. I'm doing it for pay. It's artful in that you got to be good at it, but I have no intent whatsoever to make any political point or social point at all.
I mean, I have a pretty decent chunk on Biden that the right in the audience, and even a fair amount of the left too, appreciate and can laugh at. And I do that at the start of my political stuff, because then I follow it with abortion, and I kind of goad the audience to a little bit where I'll be like, you're not one of those woke crowds that doesn't want me to talk about controversy. They're like, yeah. I'm like, all right, cool, let's talk about abortion. And then there's like, oh, hang on a second, what? But then I feel like I bought enough goodwill with the Biden stuff where then I do get, I think, a bit more of a leash to talk about some of the other issues like abortion, where I'm clearly to the left on, but it's also not a soapboxy, preachy, I'm right, you're wrong kind of thing. It's joke based. It's first and foremost, it's joke based. And it's from just like, the far end of the argument, that's ridiculous, right? We can agree on that at its essence. And I think most people like it. Okay, you make fun of both sides. It's smart. It's funny. I'm not talking about what I can't talk about. I'm just saying it. And if people are offended, they're offended. But
would you consider that to be technique, that you know that as a comic that you've got to start with the left, you know, some criticism of the left, and that earns you the right? So is that technique, or is that authentic to how you actually feel?
I would say the way I I don't know. I think it's becoming the way I feel. I think it started off as technique, and now it's gradually becoming the way I feel a little bit, in the same way that, you know, kind of laughter's rooted in truth. I think, just seeing how some jokes resonate and you're like, okay. And like, maybe I've been a little too militant on this issue. And do you know Patrick Keane at all? He was, he's a comic. He was on, I think he did the Late Show a few years back. He's a writer, but he has a podcast too. One of my favorite lines on that podcast is how the country would be so much better if everybody had to work the road, where it's, you know, doesn't matter what your beliefs are. You have to do a room in rural Wisconsin or Iowa, and then you have to do a gig in, you know, Nashville the next night, or Harlem or something. And where it's like, when you're in front of all these different crowds of people with different politics and philosophies, and you need to find a way to make them laugh as well, you sort of like, okay, yeah, all right. All this talk is like, we're going to be fine. We'll be fine. We just need to maybe learn to laugh at our side a little bit more. And so.
Well, and I think that, you know, again, sort of dragging every once in a while this back into academics, that's the original meaning of rhetoric. Like, the Greeks invented democracy, and they're like, wow, this is a mess. We also need rhetoric to help people sort of figure out how to get their way through it. And they ended up on civil discourse. Like, you need to be able to talk on both sides at all times through everything. That's the only real way to do democracy. And what you're saying is, like, coming into real contact with real people over and over again in live settings, it does. It makes you more attenuated to how do you persuade these people? How do you talk to these people?
Well, you find out what
they let you know.
I think you learn what you think when you have to write it down, and you start getting off the feedback. There are landmines here on the way to this point, and some of them you hadn't seen. And then you think, it really, if you really do it honestly, I think you end up understanding it better than you had. I think if you're pandering, you won't, but the other way you're talking about.
Well, and you're a moderate, right? Like, you would define yourself kind of as a moderate. That's where you found the comfortable space.
I think so. I think I call myself a raging moderate, actually, is what I say I am now. I get upset when it gets too far to the edge. I know, Robert, you have, how many CDs do you have now that are pretty much mostly social, political, all of them?
I have two on stand-up that I did with Dan, and then two on Helium. One's a co-one with Brian Miller, but yeah. I would say each one of them's kind of half and half. I did like the George Carlin AM/FM thing. So about half the album is usually political, topical, current eventy, and then the other half is relationship, what's going on in my life stuff.
Yeah, I used to always like, suddenly Carlin's telling a fart joke. You know, I'm like, okay.
I loved it too. Like the complete embracing of the profane and the mundane. It doesn't make it, he could elevate it so quick. It was amazing. I loved him. He's great.
And then in the next breath, he's like going into the corruption of the Ronald Reagan administration and all that.
Crazy.
Like, oh, God.
Well, and that
damn.
Was my problems with Carlin as they get older. And I think this, again, is kind of what was happening to Chris Rock. Is as you get older, the irritation factor goes higher and higher. And like Carlin's last three or four specials were more just an old guy bitching about things. It wasn't the sort of beautiful starting in the middle and then dragging, people over here and like, it was more like, I just hate the world. And here we go.
Yeah. It wasn't playful in the same way at all.
Well, let's use that to jump over to CPAC. You mentioned this, like this is the, outrage du jour of the week. Like, how do we get the craziest fuckers that we've got in the world and get them some, free media time? And that's what it's doing.
So Bolsonaro's there. Is that true that Bolsonaro?
Yeah. It's all the greatest hits. Like we'll take fascism from everywhere. Orban, whatever, wherever you got it, just
Putin,
bring it.
Is Putin going to be there, or is he busy? Is he too busy? Too busy.
And then you're probably wondering, well, how do they sleep at night? On a MyPillow. That's how they sleep at night. Very comfortable.
Nice. Yeah, there was a meme yesterday of the MyPillow guy going long, and the Chiron said, it's time to wrap it up. Seriously. That. Yeah. Imagine that, a CPAC person not following their time limits.
Well, that's a regulation. Yeah. Those are regulations. All right. Those are made to be discarded.
That's right.
You're repressing.
It was rigged.
Yeah.
It's rigged. Cancel culture. Yeah.
So they hit all the, it's kind of fun to watch that from a perspective of, again, just clear public discourse analysis. Like CRT has run its course. They're not CRTing right now as much because people have heard it too much. So now they've moved on to trans and drag queen shows. And so they're just hitting the topics that still have some juice in them, and they're just moving around. And it's kind of fun to watch. Like, it's so programmatic.
Yeah, they're camping out on those. Like, I just saw the big article in, I think it was the Post today, going over DeSantis and how he's just got his whole Republican government just launching just this huge attack. It's basically a cultural stance so he can run for president on it. It's like, look what I'm doing. I'm your,
Again, it's that, it's the outrage media. So you've got to do it where it's got some spectacle to it, some visuality to it. It's got enough freshness to it that it can play in the media. And so, I'm going to send a bunch of immigrants to.
Crazy. I think
Martha's Vineyard.
I was thinking back the other day, Robert and I were talking about this, when Afghanistan, when they were fighting that war, their first war, the Taliban, when they're fighting the Taliban with the Afghans, they were fighting because the Taliban wouldn't let them shave and they wouldn't let them use toothpaste. So they're basically fighting for the right to brush their teeth with Crest, shave, and fly kites. And I used to have a bit about how, we fought for taxation without representation. And I just don't know if this other war, if we should have known a democracy might have a problem here. But we're going to have a fight over pronouns. We're going to go to war over pronouns. We're every bit as primitive now. I'm like, well, we are nuts. It's crazy. Bathrooms and pronouns and shaving, toothpaste, whatever. Goofy stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, a lot of his stuff, though, I mean, it's to get attention, but substantive, like the CRT thing, right? It was, you're drawing a line in the sand, but there really isn't much of an issue there. Because from what I understand, like that law was written kind of like the Tennessee one, where it's so vague that they're worried it's going to be interpreted. And it could be, but I think that's where places like the ACLU and will come in and be like, well, this is just bullshit. You can't do that. And ideally it would hold up in a court depending on the judge, but like, we're taking a stand. Like, we're not going to teach kids about sucking dick in the kindergarten through third grade. And everybody's like, yeah, finally,
yeah.
As if all the, you know, grooming pedophiles on the left, you're like, ah, damn you, DeSantis. We would have gotten away with creating whole generations of victims had you not passed this.
Yeah. Cause that's where they are. They're all in Hollywood. It's not scouts in the church. No, that's not where it's happening.
Well, one of the ways I explain it to people is that, you know, basically this is logos versus mythos. Like, if you look at it from a theoretical perspective, are you doing logic about all this stuff? Because logically, none of it works. You look at it and you're like, okay, there's some baby cause and effect that you can get people tagged into. But if you're playing mythos and story, villains and heroes, then you can win forever. And it's basically, how do I turn a drag queen into a villain? Well, they're a pedophile. And once you're in there, it's not about proof or whether it's true or not. It's that, can I make them just the ugliest villain possible? And then that triggers, you know, the people who are like, yeah, I get it. Like a drag queen, you know, trying to get my second grader to dress up like that. And like,
you got to stop that. Yeah.
And that's where it gets to the level of like, yeah, if I'm writing a really good story here, then I get into the media, I get noticed, and I have some juice. And I always tell people, like, if you want to counter that, well, look at it as a story. How do I break the story, not the logic? So you find the left always, like, you know, setting it in logic. Like, well, your logic is wrong. That's not what they're doing. They're doing story. Yeah, yeah.
The logic doesn't. I found that it just that it's. It, no way. You're never going to get anywhere.
What is this, 1950? You're banning drag shows? Like, was it Lenny Bruce's first album, like, making fun of this stuff? Like, how it just, it comes around again. I think, like you were saying, like, the critical, now it's this, like, it's a new season of crazy. Like Dexter, right? Last year was the John Lithgow killer. Now it's this. And it's yeah.
Same thing. It's a, yeah.
they could have taken the Senate easily in the midterms had they not taken abortion away from people and admitted when they lost elections, but they hung on to it. And for the first time since, I don't know, it was like FDR, whoever the Democratic president was, the incumbent Democratic president gained Senate seats.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
But because they gave the crazies the helm, good luck in the next go around. Like, all of Trump's people's lost, I think, in the Senate, except J.D. Vance in Ohio. But like, clearly the brand doesn't work nationally, I don't think. I mean, I guess we'll find out. But it seems like only the Republicans are like, no, we could win with Trump.
Like, just as a character, who else do they have? DeSantis is not a charming villain, you know?
And that's the thing. So many people that I talk to are like, oh, DeSantis is the guy. I'm like, there's no charisma. There's no charm. As soon as you get him on a debate stage, Trump's going to ridicule him. And he's going to pull a Marco Rubio. He'll be like, well, my D's bigger than your D. And people are like, all right, who gives a shit? We'll vote for Trump.
Well, yeah. And I guess I put too much weight on the ideas of his, because he's trying to put an image with policy. That's what DeSantis is trying to do with all these Florida laws. See,
business fascism.
I'm going to attack Disney, you know. But you're right. I mean, he doesn't have that sociopathic charm that Trump has. I don't think. Man, maybe he'll shock me.
Well,
a little more. Go ahead. What?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, he was a little more, you know, I think one of the reasons he did better this last time around was because Florida's position on abortion was at 15 weeks, which is actually, compared to the 6-week thing, reasonable when you compare it to the other thing. You know what I mean? That's a moderate position compared to what these other states are doing. And I think that saved him, frankly.
Unless the primaries push him to go even further against that. Because if you're a Republican and you're Nikki Haley or someone else, and you're already a bit more of a moderate in foreign policy or some other stuff, the only way you can really attack DeSantis would be like, well, I'm more pro-life than you are. 15, that's basically a child. They've got fingers, toes, hopes, dreams, their mom's eyes. Yeah. You're killing a child at 15 weeks, Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
So if they can get him to make some sort of pledge or something, but I also wonder, I mean, how old's DeSantis?
Probably in his 40s.
I wonder.
I was looking this stuff up. Yeah.
I wonder what the calculations are, though, because every poll seems like the only Republican that Biden would be Trump. But Trump also seems kind of now Larry Hogan today came out, said he's not running. And I almost wonder if there's any calculation in the DeSantis camp where, like, if Trump steamrolls this shit again, he'll lose to Biden. Maybe it's better to hold off and just let Trump lose again. And then after in 2024, when it's been 8 years of a Democrat, maybe Biden dies and Kamala gets in, or he steps out and Kamala gets in, has to run for reelect. Whoever it's going to be, Kamala, I mean, it's probably going to be a weaker candidate. Then maybe you got a better shot then when you don't have Trump in there. But I don't know. I could be wrong. But I wonder if that's a factor just because he's young, right? Let Trump make a flaming shitball of himself again while you just become the Republican god in Florida doing anything you want. And then
it's a good question. Like I tell people Trump is it's completely unique. There will never be another Trump. He was already in super, super famous for 25 years as a business guy within a C-level celebrity. He was a joke. He was a clown for a long time. And then he got into a drama, which, on the Apprentice, he started playing in a drama character. And then he knows all the reality, the techniques to create reality, stories, creating villains and attacks and conflicts and, this just amplifying farther and farther. There's nobody else like Trump ever. And he destroyed the Republican Party as far as having, that kind of kinetic character. There's nobody in politics who's ever had anything like that are entertainment. Maybe The Rock, maybe somebody coming from the entertainment industry can now sort of come back in and take a DeSantis or people like that out.
But getting back to what you're saying with like the mythos, I think that's why a lot of people are still underestimating Trump for this go around. Like, he'll never get the nomination. He won't It doesn't matter what his he's been cast as the hero for these people. It doesn't matter what you say. Trump is the savior.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as Trump decides I'm in, now maybe if someone calls me, if I'm talking to friends, DeSantis looks good. Nikki Haley would be a good vice. Once they close that curtain that Ben Scott, he's got a voting booth. And that's how you know Ben's gone full liberal. He's just voting from home repeatedly. He's got that curtain. Once they pull that curtain, they're voting for Trump every time. I work in the road. The second you leave a city, you're seeing Trump 2024 signs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think once they attach that decision to their, it's like Trump is plugged into their, when you say mythos, it's like the whole story, like their whole worldview myth, like explanation. Some of them it's tapped into their whole story of end times and religious, and that's not going anywhere.
Well, and that's super fascinating. Who watch like they can literally plug Trump into the visual representation of just turn him into Jesus or turn him into Rambo. Like it's literally watching this character that's just malleable across. It's the hero, dramatic form is. It doesn't matter. They can put Trump in there again. Logic makes no difference. Watching him dress like, as Rambo and like some kind of steroid Trump. And you're like, what?
But or the home of Jesus with his hands on his shoulders or whatever. Like he's signing some bill to ban Muslims from the country. And Jesus is just like looking over his shoulder with the glow.
That's the McNaughton guy, right? Mormon, by the way, McNaughton. Yeah. And he is one of his main art store galleries is there in Utah. I've gone to see it once. I went to see it.
I mean, Netanyahu's back. You don't think Trump can come back? Netanyahu's back.
Did you say Yahoo or Netanyahu?
Either way. Yeah.
Either way. Yeah, not Netanyahu is back.
Yeah, that whole negative, sort of the right story and the politics and the rhetoric of it plays. It plays in social media, plays sure. in media. And that's why people are like, how are they getting all this power again? I'm like, well, it matches up. I don't think the left has matched into story the way the right is. So
exactly. It's entertainment. It's a show. That's why, because it's not policies. It's not minimum wage. It's like good versus evil. Uh-huh. You know, we're the Avengers, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley. They're Hydra or Nancy Pelosi's Skeletor, whatever.
They live in it. They live in the movie.
They are Hydra. I mean, if you're in
this religious culture, you're in the movie. I mean, I grew up in that. You're born into it. There's a story. You have this part you're going to play. And this is where we are in history and time. They're in the movie and they've cast him. You're not going to be able to just push that out of there. I don't think he's not going anywhere.
Do you feel that still bent? We've talked about that before. Like, do you still feel like you're intellectually out of the movie? You're mostly out of the movie, like within hardcore, you know, a religion. But you're still, you can probably still feel it, right?
Oh, yeah, you know, you feel it. It influences everything you see. It's a lens to the whole world. Like when you're raised that way, and it's not, Mormonism usually isn't as wacky as some, but still, you sit down, you watch the evening news, and you might as well be watching an Old Testament prophet going over predictions of that, oh, it's getting close. Jesus will be back. And he said, it's in you. It permeates everything. It's so powerful. I don't think people don't understand that once he takes that role and is part of this religious and they start wrapping scriptures onto it, like, oh boy, it's not going anywhere.
Now, when did you start to separate? Were you like in like early teens? Like I was raised hardcore Catholic, and I remember, you know, absorbing it as a kid. And then pretty soon, like even right after just out of kidness, I was like, you know what? I can just see bullshit, you know, right and left in this. And it was a pretty easy separation, even though I was still forced to go to hang out in Catholic, you know, masses. And we were in the Catholic community, but I was not Catholic. I knew how to live in it, but
What age was that for you?
That had to be like fifth, sixth grade or something like that.
Oh yeah. No way. I was, I wanted it to be true so bad that I just was wrestling with doubt. I was just trying to push doubt down for, 24, 25 years. You know, going on a Mormon mission and just, oh, this has got to be true. Because if it's not true, the pain you have to go through, like the shame, the separation, that it's so hard. Because when you grow up in this tight community and, you know, it's hard to separate. So I wanted it to be true so bad. And then eventually
also separating from friends and family, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't have an experience, but I would imagine like just because that's your whole world. So your tribe, you know, it's.
Yeah. You separate.
Robert, did you avoid the religious indoctrination?
I was fortunate enough where my parents are Lutheran. So already kind of lax. And they were, we did go to church every Sunday and I got a Bible. I think I even asked for a Bible when I was like 13 or 14, just intellectually. I was just like, oh, it's cool. The stories, again, stories, narrative and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was also a funny kid and I loved comedians. And so I would also get comedians books. And at first it was like Jay Leno or whatever, where they're not touching that issue. But then I can't remember if it was like Dennis Miller or Bill Maher. I got one of those at 15. And they wrote about religion and it was like this is mostly bullshit. And so it wasn't a hard thing for me. They were making points and they, not only were the points logical, but they were funny and I was just sold. And I was like, oh, okay, well this is, and so at, you know, I think maybe toward the end of high school was just kind of, okay, I get what people see in this. And I do also feel a sense of community sometimes. And it's like, okay, it's good to come together, but let's not go crazy with it. And my parents kind of respected that too. Cause I mean, my mom, to her credit, even when I was younger, she'd get me books and albums from comedians that she didn't necessarily agree with, but you know, if I wanted them, she'd do it and was very supportive. And so through having my worldview expanded through Carlin, Hicks, all those guys, then there was no going back after that. Yeah. I mean, once that door's open, it's not getting closed again.
I think it's funny. Like, we're again a progression. Like, you got freedom pretty quickly. I was kind of like, I got it. And then, you know, Bent had to fight his way out.
Two, 3 years. It's been about 30 years.
Two, 3 years ago.
What do you do with your kids, Bent? How do you raise your kids?
I don't know what they're doing right now. They're not, we don't go to any church. And it's, you know, that's an issue. I don't know, because I don't, you know, I don't know what I'm losing necessarily. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? I don't really know what I'm not giving them. I mean, I know some of the things I'm not giving them, but I have a feeling there's probably some things in that package that.
Some good things?
There were some good things. Yeah.
Do you think maybe there's a trigger factor? Because not me, just kind of speaking for my wife, who prior to marrying me was married previously and also has some very negative experiences with the church. And even though she's a believer, it's hard for her to go back there, because even though she wants to believe and she has some faith, the second some asshole gets up there and just starts acting like he has, then it's just immediate trigger, like, oh, nope, they're lying, they're pulling one over on people. So even though the notion of church in the sense of like community, helping one another, caring for one another, believing in a higher power that, you know, to help get you through the hard times, even though there are some, you can't help but be like, nah, you're an asshole, you're lying to me, you know.
Yeah, I think that does happen. That definitely does happen.
Well, I didn't raise my kids. I didn't raise my kids religious at all. I remember my son was 2 or 3. He was still in a car seat in the back, and he was in a daycare. And apparently one of them was pretty religious and was like whispering stuff into their ears. And we're driving along just out of the blue. He goes, I believe in God. And I'm like, all right, buddy. He goes, yeah. I'm like, do you know what that means? He's like, no.
You know, he's trying to program you. I had Jehovah's Witnesses come here the other day. A couple of Jehovah's Witnesses ladies came here, and they, you know, what do you believe in?
Did you try to recruit them into Mormonism?
I did. Well, no. Tried to recruit them. I didn't try to recruit them. They did. They tried. Well, how did that house get here? If someone had to build it, so the earth, so God had to. And the easy answer, of course, is, well, who made God? You know, like, oh, you know, I mean, if you're gonna,
you and your logic traps,
an object who's as a creator, well, God exists, so who made God? But,
I love how they worm out of, like, the mice can always get out of the trap, right? It's like, well, we just don't think about that one. We can't understand that one. So
it was weird. So that was way too easy. That was just dumb.
So anything else you guys have noticed? We're coming up closer towards an hour here, so we'll finish up. Anything like going on, you know, comedy-wise and things like that? What do you got, Bent?
I looked this up. Zelensky's birthday, 1978. I was just wanted to see how old he was, but it turns out he's an Aquarius like me, which got me to thinking about astrological signs. And you know, when you look at Putin, he's Libra. Those two should get along, according to all the really great. Like, it's crazy. And then I looked up Xi. All those three should get along, according to astrology. It's Biden. Biden apparently should be at odds with China, according to astrology. So I had some funny things, but they're not. You have to read them. Go ahead. Look up the astrological stuff. It's funny when you think.
So it's an astrological war. That's, you know, like it's being fought on the astral plane somehow.
Maybe it is. Well, it'd be as believable as some of this.
So maybe
stuff.
You're saying instead of China getting involved and the UN getting involved, we just need a girl named Harmony that works in a crystal store to sit down with these two guys and just,
bring them together. Maybe that's where the solution is. And you had another story about I hope we're going to talk about, because I want to know if you knew more about the hippos, 70 hippos that Escobar.
Do you 70? Guys know the background on that?
Only a little, and it was a while ago.
Yeah, he had so much money, you know, and it's the Mike Tyson one-up the tiger, you know, so you keep finding more and more things to buy. So people will go, what? And Pablo Escobar bought and imported from Africa, I think 30, like, I don't know how many it was originally, hippos, and put them in the ecosystem around like Colombia, like where he was. And now they, you know, they've replicated enough so that they're becoming part of the, they're an invasive species within the ecosystem. So they call him the cocaine hippos because he used the cocaine money to buy the hippos.
I think he was maybe using the cocaine too. You know, those kind of decisions make me think, okay, he wasn't just selling the drugs, like 70 hippos.
Well, depending on how many, depending on how quickly they reproduce, the hippos might also have been on cocaine. You thought they were invasive before the cocaine.
That's way, way now.
Yeah. Wow, these hippos are very bold. Yeah. They will go anywhere.
Were they, I was thinking maybe they were like pit bulls, but you know, hippos, like he, you know, cause usually the drug dealers have pit, so they're like guard dogs that get a bad
guard
rap.
Hippos. They're very territorial. Good. Yeah. That would and be like, good. Like a moat of hippos.
Oh yeah. They're very aggressive, but it's like they say about the pit bulls. It's not the breed. It's the owner, you know, the pit bull.
Because I like to mix information and stand up all the time. I always find myself diving into something Wikipedia level at least. And hippos are not territorial on land. They're only territorial inside the water.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They you come give on them a little bit of cocaine, though. They'll be territorial. Just give them a little bit of cocaine.
Unless there's cocaine on land. Yeah. And they're like, that's my cocaine.
Yeah. If you see a hippo in a cardigan sweater, he's the addiction counselor. He's the one that's trying to help out the hippos that are trying to quit.
How big a spoon hippos. Would they have? That's the question.
You saw the nostril on a hippo. I mean, my word.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Millions of dollars.
It's like that.
At a time. Yeah.
It's like that Steve Martin line in Roxanne where he's like, keep that guy away from my cocaine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Big nose. So yeah, they're now you know, exporting the hippos elsewhere because there's too many hippos in Colombia.
Man,
that's so 70. Funny. That's
a lot
so
of zoos too had to be like impressed with his hippo program. Like, wow, you know what I mean? That's a good.
It's going to be like the reverse of, you know, like how China had the pandas and they had a hard time getting them to mate. Once these cocaine hippos, once they see, you know, so like, hey, easy. Hey, fella, come on now. That's not.
I didn't know cocaine had that effect.
Yeah. What's the deal with pandas and bad like reproduction? Is it panda on panda? Like if you put somebody else in there, like a mountain lion or something, then the panda's like, oh, I'll take that. I just don't like other pandas.
Yeah, I don't know what that species is, but it seems to be a hard, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's the horizontal stripes make them look bad. Plus, the white part gets urine stained. Have you seen it's the crotch part is white. It's such bad design. What was God thinking to put
the
crotch white?
I'm not going to jump on that. Look at you, yellow crotching panda.
Gross. Should have made the vertical and then dark on the crotch.
I'm a bear, but I'm not an animal. This isn't. Even with a gorilla's dick, I wouldn't go anywhere near there.
I was reading something also about bears, you know, like a male-female bear, like, you know, pairing or whatever. They can create like another, I don't know, like 20 bears in 10 years, like if they're lucky or something like that. But deer, you know, can create like 1,000 deer in the same amount of time. Just insane the difference.
They're crazy. There's way too many deer. And mice are even crazy. Have you looked up the reproductive rate of mice? It's insane. Like, two pair can be several.
That's just a great sentence right there.
That's a great clip. If you can cut that and have that just be like whatever they're called, the bumper, the screener, the just Ben going, have you looked up the reproductive power of mice?
It's insane. It's exponential. It's crazy. I don't know. But I guess they got to get eaten a lot, right?
Yeah, that's prey, right? So prey just overproduce. And like I have a bit where I ask people whether pro hunting or not. And, you know, almost everybody raised their hand. I'm like, I notice there's no hooves. You know, seems like the prey never really gets to vote on this. It's straight predator.
Trigger fingers. Bunch of trigger fingers in the air. Yeah.
Yeah, hippos are crazy. Hippos don't swim, by the way. Everybody thinks they're great swimmers. They don't swim. They run on the bottom.
Oh, do they? You don't. Yeah. They just.
They can't swim.
Huh. Well, that's kind of like I was in grade school. I would just run. I never swam.
Anything else? Anything else you guys got? Robert, you got any story that's popped up?
Yeah. So I'm actually doing a bit on this. I was in the news, I think, last week. It was just one of those gifts from God, especially as someone that does current events where you're like, oh, mwah. So I don't know if you saw the news in the camps in northern Syria with the ISIS widows. Because, you know, we've all been young and in love. You fall for a guy, he's in ISIS, he dies in a raid, and now you're just stuck, but your home country won't let you come back because, you know. So they, but some of the ISIS widows still believe in the cause and want to breed, much like mice or hippos or whatever. They need more, so they want to breed more ISIS fighters. So they've actually created a stud farm of teenage boys that they use to impregnate themselves with. And so the bit that I'm like, listen, I'm a human being. I get it. I know on an intellectual level that sexual assault is a terrible, wicked, horrible thing. And I believe that any boy that wants to be rescued should. But you can't tell me there isn't one dude there who's like, go on without me. I'm going to ride this out. I'm going to ride this out. They're like, Yusuf, the rescue copter is here. He's like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. Tell the world my story. Seriously, tell everyone my story.
Well, reverse harem. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ben gave me a good tag, too. Like, did I die already? Is this heaven? This has to be heaven, right? Like, I must have died, and this is...
Yeah, well, it's also right. Like, don't try. Yeah, learn real quickly. You don't need a virgin. You don't need 73 virgins. Mm-hmm. 73 experienced.
Yeah, you know. And not only that, but like a cause behind it. You know, like we have to replenish the fleet. Like, all right, man.
It's just wild.
Yeah.
Do they have any like pregnant? Because you know we had the Octomom situation. Surely they're going for that.
I would think, yeah.
Like, well, that was eight children at one time, like more bang for your buck, or your more buck for your bang.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's eight little jihadists.
Yeah, it seems like there should be, like, you have the refugee clinic, the stud clinic, or stud camp, then you should have the artificial, you know, like the amplify the number of, yeah, that's totally in line.
Example.
Yeah. So, you know, thoughts and prayers for the kid that decides to stick around and not get rescued and replenish.
Lots of thoughts, mostly.
Lots of thoughts. Didn't need any prayers, just lots of thoughts.
Yeah. Send cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's awesome, man. That's, there's always stuff to the crazy stories over here that just kind of wander up. And then the major stories, which are decimating actual, you know, societies. It's kind of fun to talk about either. But it's been great, man. You guys, super fun to talk. Pimp your stuff real quick. Where are you going to be? What you going to do?
You go first, Ben? Robert.
Oh, okay. Well, I will be with Bent at the Comedy Cave in Calgary at the end of the month, March, I think, 27th to April 1st. But in the more near term, I'll actually be at the House of Comedy in Minneapolis, Minnesota this upcoming, Wednesday. I think that's the 7th or something. This week I'll be at the House of Comedy. And then at Robert Burrill 2 on Twitter, at Instagrampa Comedy on Instagram.
All right.
Yeah, and I will be at the Kelly Theater, Stuttgart, Germany, doing comedy and one funny song amongst some amazing singers. It's called Fairytale Follies, and that's this coming Friday and Saturday. And then after that, I'm on a ship. And then I'll be in Calgary with Robert at the Comedy Cave.
Sounds like a good month. I will be in the Persian Gulf on a big boat, and then the Gulf of Bengal, I think. Is that what it is, the Bengal, whatever it is? So I'll be on those doing comedy for – they tell me it's old Americans – so we'll see.
You can swing You can swing by the little camp where they're trying to make new jihadists, and you could pitch in there. Maybe you can help.
Like, hey, yeah. I've got kids. I know how this works. Yeah. I've got evidence. All right. Well, super fun being on the blast with you guys. We will do this again. Come back and see us. Life is always moving. So is comedy. And we will match those things up once again.